I'm Luke. I'm here with Gitch and Ron.
Hey. Welcome.
This is Batista.
He's gone. Oh, no, he's not.
I don't know.
Who are you talking? Batista who? Oh, I was talking about Batista like in the WWE.
Oh, no, I'm talking
Batista. It's also a hair product. My wife has this spray called, it's not actually Batista, but it looks like Batista. Every time I see it, I say, hey, honey, it's Batista. It's not that funny.
No, it's not.
Every time, it's like the first time I said it. Oh, it's good.
Does it have an odor?
You laugh at your own jokes?
All the time. You know, I'm one of the funniest people I know.
Yes.
Oh, but this is Between the Two Worlds, and today we're just blessed to have Gitch here. I'm just really happy Gitch is here.
He looks like he's in a really good mood today. Are you in a good mood today?
I'm pretty good. I was here every other time, though.
Yeah, but today I'm actually happy you're here.
Okay. I was just making fun of you, though, a minute ago before we started.
Yeah, I like a guy who fights back.
Okay. Hi.
But you seem like you're in a better mood today.
That's because he has his Blundstones on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get new Blundstones?
Yeah, Christmas.
Now
I didn't really know what they were. I opened this box. I'm kind of like,
I've been wearing them.
And I open them up. I'm like, okay, these are.
But that's a new deal, isn't it?
Then I realized what they are. They're awesome.
So how tall are you now?
A little taller.
Nice.
Yeah, walk a little faster.
Your hair is spiked, too.
Yeah.
How hard? Man, you must be really tall today.
Yep. Lost a little weight. Can you tell?
No.
Oh.
But. That was a bit of a giant leap on your part.
Yeah.
I was really trying to encourage you and bless you with the spiked hair and the Blundstones and that you're actually taller. And then you went and threw that. Have I lost weight?
That's too much.
That was way too much for one conversation.
I tried.
But we get started. The holidays are over.
Yes. It's time to get
finally,
back at it.
Can't wait for the snow to go. But I want to know.
Can I just say,
okay, sure,
go back to holidays
something.
For a second?
Yeah, sure. You can say whatever you want.
We hit this a bit last week. But I would just like to reiterate how overrated I think New Year's is.
Are you bitter about this?
No. Luke's still talking about holidays. It's like January 10th almost. They're long gone. It's not like...
You have a watch.
Yeah, a nice one.
And it has a date on it too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Anyways, my point is, like, it's gone, Luke. The holidays are, like, well gone, you know?
But it's still cold.
True.
See, when the holidays
What does this
are-
have to do with New Year's and overrated?
Just the fact that I find New Year's to be the most overrated holiday that exists in our calendar.
I agree.
Do you agree?
Can we move on?
Yeah. Do you agree, though?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I want to know...
If we can move on.
What's the worst slash... Or, like, let's... The biggest plus minus gift you've done. So, let's say... You've given a great gift and got a crappy gift in return, or you've given a terrible gift and then someone gave you an amazing gift in return, or you just gave a gift and someone was severely disappointed. Who wants to start?
Wow.
I'll take that as a Ron.
Well, so you're looking for, okay, here I could, there's a couple of gifts that I've kind of been the wow factor, I think.
I mean, I could tell a couple ones you've given me.
Yes. Okay. Now, here's a couple of gifts that I've given. When Nancy and I were first married and I was a youth pastor in Richmond, she had moved from, she moved from Winnipeg, I moved from Chicago, I moved to Vancouver, and then we got married, and then she moved, and so she left her job, she left her friends, she left kind of her identity, all that thing. So it was a lot for her to, you know, obviously marrying me is a lot, let alone moving a couple of provinces over.
Agreed.
You know,
agreed.
Agreed. I understand 100%. So what I wanted to do was to kind of, you know, bolster her love for me and say, yeah, this guy, he's the real deal. So this is like in our first couple of months of marriage.
You're looking to woo her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have to woo her anymore.
You already married her.
Because I married her. So
woo her more.
But so I planned this thing with my youth group that, and in those days, the game show that was popular in youth ministry was behind door number one, door number two, door number three type thing. You know, I forget what the game show was called, but anyways, so we built this deal of having a game show, and Nancy was going to be the contestant because she was the first time that she'd been at youth group, and so we had door number one, door number two, door number three, and she had no idea what was going on. And then you can choose, do I want door number three, will I trade door number three for door number one, that kind of thing, you know. And so
let's make a deal.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, let's make a deal. There you go. How old are you? Man, you're impressive.
Thank you.
Anyway, so I did this. And so we worked it out that she chose door number one. And it just happened to be the gym doors was door number one. And in drove a 1972 Beetle that I'd bought for her.
Wow.
I know. And drove it right into the gym. And
the whole youth group's there.
Yeah, cheering. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. And so anyways, so I got her the Beetle.
Wait, was she happy?
Oh, yeah. She was pretty excited.
Wait, what was behind door number two and three?
I can't even remember. But
what if she picked two?
Yeah,
or three?
What if she picked?
We were just coaching her. We had the crowd cheering for her that she had to go.
Yeah, but what if she didn't though?
But she did. She wanted to please the kids. The kids were instructed.
She's a real crowd.
Yep. So they did that. And then I would say another gift that I bought her that I was probably not near as as sensitive. I actually went to Youth Specialties.
You got her a book, didn't
you?
I wish
I got her a book.
Got her a book. Oh, no.
So I went to East Fresh. I think it was in Dallas. And
how many years ago was this, though?
Oh, this is probably a good 10 or more.
Yeah, this is still brought up weekly, yes, occasionally, whatever, very much so. All the time.
So, and typically I go away as a family. I'd always buy everybody a gift, small gift or whatever. And as a youth pastor, I would always, and especially in the U.S. at the youth specialties, they would have that advertising room. What do they call it? Where all the
exhibition?
Yeah. And so I'd collect as many T-shirts as I possibly can. And I don't know what my record was, but one time I came home with a suitcase full of T-shirts because I'd get five.
I remember because you just come with so much stuff and the candy you'd come back with.
Oh, candy. I mean, I'd load up,
I only ever get pens at those stupid things.
No, they've really tiled it down. Like there was some really good stuff. So anyways, I needed to get some and I'd gotten stuff for the kids. And what did I get for Nancy? Nancy was into running, okay? And she was complaining about her knee. So I thought it would be really good if I bought her a knee brace.
That's thoughtful.
So these kids.
That's what you think, Itch. You think it's thoughtful, but you're wrong.
But I'm thinking this is awesome. And so all the kids get all their shirts, all the stuff I bought for them, the candy, all that kind of stuff. And here's Nancy's gift, and it's a knee brace. And I remember the look on her face. Seriously, you went to Dallas and you bought me a knee brace. So I've never heard the end of that one. Like, that was, what a horrible gift that
I bet
was.
You her knee's fixed, though.
She barely wore it.
She barely wore it. I think it sits more in a drawer someplace. She brings it out every now and then to remind me that, you remember when you bought this? Remember how excited I was about this? Remember how I thought you were a really, really thoughtful person? And no.
Good thing that was in your first couple months of marriage.
That's right.
You need to do? You need to get rid of the knee brace out of your house, donate it, whatever, then it's gone.
Actually, I wear it now.
Nice.
Gitch, what about you? You have one?
Kind of. And I'll qualify my story with this, that generally I like to think I'm a fairly good gift giver. Now, I say that because I don't
have you ever given me a gift?
I never have.
Well, then you're not.
You gave me a gift.
I did.
Do you know what that was?
Mason.
Yeah. I'm the godfather. He gave me that gift of being the godfather. So when Gitch dies, I get Mason.
That's not what that means.
It's exactly what it means.
No. I would trust a lot of people with Mason when I pass on.
And I'm one of them. I really appreciate it.
There's a few who I wouldn't. I'll just say that. Can I tell my story?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I typically don't ever go out and guess what people need or just imagine or hope buy something and hope they like it. I usually really, study people and figure out what it is they want.
Yeah, you're pretty sneaky.
I am sneaky. I'm not just going to guess on something. I want to make sure it's useful or it's actually meeting a need that they have.
Yeah.
When Jasmine and I first got married, we got married in the summer. So only a few months into our marriage came Christmas. And I thought, well, you know what I should do? Kind of like where Ron's at, right? You really want to make her feel special and awesome and, really solidify your marriage and your love. So I decided I would do what I called the 12 days of Christmas. So I would count back 12 days because her birthday falls in there too. So it's kind of like a 12-day gift, kind of a introduction sort of anticipation for Christmas. So every day there would be at least a letter, maybe a small gift, a chocolate, that kind of thing. And then a letter, a handwritten letter that really, just I expressed my love and affection and appreciation for Jasmine. So she loved it. I did it my first year, and then all the way through, you know, a few little gifts, and then on Christmas, the bigger gift. Or all the gifts add up to one big gift. You know, every year is a bit different. So I've been doing this the last few years. Now this year, money's a little tighter. We just thought, hey, it's a little bit busy. You know, we're not really going anywhere so much for Christmas. Let's just keep it low-key. Let's not do gifts this year. So I thought, awesome, great. Like, that's a whole lot of time I'm going to save. You know, not doing letters. Can save a bit of money on gifts. This is just awesome. And we agreed. And, you know, sometimes you agree not to do gifts, but, you know, one person always does. Buys the gift anyway. We said, no, none of that either. So we said, really, no gifts. Okay, no gifts. Understood. But what I didn't realize was that she didn't mean that she no longer wanted the 12 days of Christmas. This is only this year. So just a few weeks ago. So I find myself in a bit of a sticky situation when about a day before the 12 days is going to start, just last month there, she drops a very subtle hint that what maybe wasn't so subtle, where she was really expecting the 12 days of Christmas to start, you know, the following day. Meanwhile, it's a lot of preparation that goes into this.
I bet.
Writing letters, getting the chocolates, figuring out the gift. Oh, it's a lot of work. Anyways, I pulled it off. So we did it.
Oh, I was hoping for a train wreck story.
No.
Yeah. Oh. Wow, no train wreck on that?
Nope. No, I pulled it off.
Did she know that you had like zero planning on this?
If she doesn't listen to this podcast, she will have no idea.
Okay. So Jasmine, just so you know, he had no planning on this.
Hopefully she's not our only viewer.
We'll see. Anyways, no, I pulled it off. It was great.
Nicely done.
Actually is heartfelt, but I guess I just kind of figured with everything going on, we'll just sort of skip the 12-day thing. But gentlemen, if you're married and you have a wife who looks forward to some of these things, don't skip out on them because they do mean a lot.
Right on.
That's one lesson I learned. So it's not like a gift failure or a good plus minus story, but it's just a story.
Oh, speaking of Jasmine, how does she know we're talking about her?
That's funny.
Wow. That's pretty good.
How did she know that?
I don't know.
Wow. I'd say...
Did you get all 12? Maybe she's waiting for one more.
she's phoning me right now. No, she got all 12. I made sure. Yeah. Wow.
For me is, I think it was Christmas. Me and my best friend, we were swapping gifts. And I'm like, okay, I know what he likes. He loves going to concerts. So I bought him Imagine Dragon tickets.
Ooh.
Very hot. Very hot tickets. And he was pumped. And then he's like, your present's at home. So later, he got the present I got. I unwrapped it. It was a bunch of little presents. It was an orange ping pong ball, a hacky sack, a keychain, and his jock strap from when he was 8 years old.
Very generous.
Very generous.
Very generous.
Well thought out.
I feel like he didn't actually get me anything, and he just felt bad.
He panicked.
But I still use the jock strap to this day, giving out to multiple Secret Santas and White Elephants. So if you invite me to a White Elephant party, the jock strap will be there.
But here's a question. How do you keep giving it?
I keep getting it back somehow. I don't know how it works out.
Everybody knows.
Sometimes if a girl gets it, I feel bad that she picked my gift. I'll say straight up, don't pick my present. And they're like, yeah, right. I'm going to take it. I'm like, no, don't take my present. I'm going to take it anyway. Well, okay. And then they pulled it up and like, what is this? I'm like, that goes on that.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. But yeah. So we started a new sermon series, Bling Bling, past weekend. And Jeff talked a bit about giving good gifts, how God wants to give good gifts to his children. And I was thinking of for parents to their kids, when do they, or how should they give gifts to their kids? Should they just give relentlessly and be like, because like, they always want to see their kids happy. Like, how do they use their money? Do they put all their money into their kids? Because sometimes we see parents who don't have a lot of money, but yet all their money goes to have big TVs and games for their kids. So just as coming from like a parent, like, what should they do?
Well, I think, you know, I'm just spinning off of what our Bling Bling series was and just, you know, the 3 points of, you know, money is good, money is dangerous. And then the last point that Jeff made was the whole idea that God is enough and God is more important than all of that. And I think, you know, as I look back at that as a parent, I mean, you want to give your kids good gifts, good things. I mean, that's so, I mean, I love the smile on their face, you know, if it's a new, you know, from everything from a new set of basketball shoes to you know, whatever it was, you know, that we were buying, you know, Cody or Luke or Janae or Michaela or whatever. And, you know, they'd seen the smile. And as a parent, you love giving your kids gifts. You really do. And you know, and as, you know, we live in the Western world where there is a lot of stuff to give. There's a lot of stuff to buy. And I think a lot of times our kids grow up in a world thinking that all of this is available because money is has an endless flow. I remember Janaea in the early years, you know, when ATMs were just coming out, you know, and then, of course, we'd go out as a family. And I'd just say, hey, I'm just going to go to the ATM, you know, and I'd pick up some cash and then we'd go out to eat or buy something or whatever. But often kids would stay in the vehicle. I just zip into the bank, ATM, away to go. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that she, you know, ATM stands for,
money.
What does it stand for?
Money.
Automated
teller machine.
Yeah.
She thought it was at the moment. That's what she thought that ATMs, at the moment, you get money.
Actually, that's what it does mean now.
It does mean now. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. At the moment. And I thought, really, isn't that interesting? Because what the message was that at that very moment, I could get money. Mm. You know? No idea that it was coming out of my account, but at the moment that machine could give money. And so I think we, you know, the important question here is, I think for all of us as parents and you know, as you guys are younger too, is how do we handle our money? What is the legacy of our money? How do we teach our kids the value of money? I mean, I grew up in an era where mom and dad never had the sex talk with kids. Okay. Yeah. You had to figure that out someplace by yourself, wherever, with others, figure it out, you know. But I think now we live in an age where many of our parents, you know, and in youth ministry, I believe, probably have these conversations.
Yeah. And it's happening so often in schools now.
Like, yeah.
It's always on schools. It's on any kind of news network. It's always being portrayed. Your friends are always talking about it. So it's something that's always talked about now.
It's out there.
It's oversaturated.
Know? Yeah. And so parents are very much, I believe, on top of that discussion. So, which begs the question then, do we talk about money with our kids? Mm. You know, do we have conversations about this? And I think that's probably one of the areas that we probably would, you know, parents don't necessarily have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I mean, how would you know the value of a dollar? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. How would you know what all of that means? Mm-hmm. And when it just seems to keep coming.
Yeah. I think we could go a lot of different ways with this. One of the things I think is key though, is to, I think, teach biblical values. And so by that, I mean things like stewardship, right? And, you know, God blesses us all and gives us all different amounts of different things. So certain, you know, giftings and abilities and talents, maybe for some it's more or less money, or maybe for some we have more or a greater or a lesser level of health. We all have different things that God's given us. And I think in all cases, whether we're talking about health or money, but specifically in this case, money, I think we got to demonstrate stewardship. And so we need to be faithful with much. So if God has blessed, you know, you come from a family with a lot of money, your parents have been very successful and maybe own a business or whatever, I think we need to demonstrate. And even for me, right, I have a young son, he's 1.5 now, but, you know, we're very careful to, even at such a young age and as our family grows, teaching, you know, kind of these values about, you know, you've got to make do with what you have and be a good steward, and right, you don't want to waste things. And I think at the same time, if, you know, you come from a family with very little, I think you can still demonstrate good stewardship and, you know, thankfulness and gratitude with little, even in those moments of what seems like lack, you know, recognizing that God is the giver of all gifts and God is the source of all things. And so I think whatever the case, whether we're talking about an abundance of money or maybe a lack, I think we can, you know, as parents and that kind of thing, as you know, youth workers and pastors, demonstrate the idea of, mm-hmm. of stewardship, being good stewards, being good users of the things God has given us. And one of the things for me growing up, I always had a job. I just did. I always, mostly because I wanted stuff. That was the bottom line. And my parents got tired of lending me money and me paying them back over 5 years. You know, it started with, I wanted a basketball hoop. I thought it was the coolest thing to have a basketball hoop in the driveway. And that was that was just my dream, was to have a basketball hoop in the driveway. So my parents said, what are you laughing at? You don't think I can play basketball?
No.
Okay. I could at the time. I was a kid. I wanted a basketball hoop. So my parents said,
how old were you then?
Oh, 7, or so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was young. It was a big thing, right? Basketball hoop is, I don't know what. Mm-hmm. At the time, the one I wanted was, I think it was about $150.
That makes sense, yeah. Like one of those ones you put sand or water in the bottom?
Well, I couldn't afford that one. I wanted, so I ended up having to go with the one.
Playmobil ones where you like push up and push down?
No, like a real deal. Like dig a hole in the on your property.
Oh, cemented in.
Cemented in, yeah. Wow. Because we just didn't have the space and whatever for the one that wheels around and stuff. Anyways, so my parents said, this is great, but this is a good opportunity for you to learn how to earn something, right? So we lived in an area where, in a new development, and so all around us were houses being built. And so after school, I would go with my dad with our wagon or whatever. We would maybe drive up the hill to a new area, and I would go through these construction sites, and I would go through the houses or go through the garbage bins or whatever, and I would pick bottles. And I picked $150 worth of bottles over a few months, and I bought my basketball hoop. And then a year later or so, I decided I really wanted to pick up the drums. So my parents said, okay, great. Like, you know, slowly we're getting bigger. You see where this is going. I same thing, wanted a drum kit. My parents said, okay, great. So that time they fronted me the money, but I had to pay them back. And so the only way you can pay back your parents when you're 9 or 10 is slowly. They can either withhold your allowance, but in that time I learned how to, again, work picking bottles. And then I started in the summer going around selling pop to all the construction guys and this kind of thing. And then I would take the empties, and then, you know, you win twice. So I learned how to not only work, but I learned to, be thankful. And it gave me, you know, Ron, like you said a minute ago, understanding the value of a single dollar. Mm-hmm. And you begin to ascribe meaning and value to every little thing. And so I know for me, I was really thankful for this experience, as much as it was hard work and it was tiring. And who wants to go pick bottles, you know, in the middle of January as a kid? But it taught me how to work, and it gave value to certain things. And so I think there are things we can do to be teaching these kinds of things, whether you're a parent or, you know, a youth worker, whatever the case may be. I think there's things we can do to help ascribe value, to really teach good stewardship to students, young people, teenagers.
Yeah, I know that was very beneficial for me, was when you and Mom made me get a job. Mm-hmm. Or I'd always have to help you with doing lockers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you give money for that. But it really made me come to sense when it's like, okay, if you're going to drive a car, you have to help. You have to put gas in when it's not. There's no gas in it, and you have to take care of it, and having to get a job to do that. So I wanted to go for lunch. You'd have to get a job. And so made me get a job at the sports entertainment center, then catering, and just continued on from there. And I thought that was very helpful to realize, okay, money just doesn't come from my parents. Money actually comes from working. So it comes from them actually doing a job and them getting paid for it. It's just not mom and dad having an endless supply of money, which you can sort of see in today's culture is my parents will pay for it. My parents will pay for it. My parents will pay for it. And it's in this whole idea that your parents will pay for everything that you want in life.
And I think the bottom line is that, you know, whether you want a basketball hoop or you want to pay for your cell phone or you want to put gas in the car, you figure out that's, you value something. That's very important to me. And so that value is attached to a dollar figure. You know, if I need a cell phone, I need to, you know, at that time you needed $20 a month or whatever it was, or if you needed the $150 for the hoop, or put anything out there. But there's a monetary, place for that someplace. So my question on all of this is, what do we teach our kids about that? That, you know, as long as you have money, you can get things, you know.
So as long as you have money, you shouldn't have any problems, because money can buy what you want.
And so do we. Yeah, exactly. So as long as I have money, I'm happy. As long as I have money, I get what I want. You know, you want those shoes, you got to buy them. You want that hoop, you got to go buy them. And so we give our kids, you know, okay, this will be a good example. You know, like, hey, you're going to have to work, collect bottles, do whatever, have a paper route, all of those things, you know, where you're going to go day after day, do all this stuff, and it's hard work, and it's all good. But what do we really teach our kids about money? You know, and then we actually said, you know, okay, remember, you know, out of the money you earn, you've got to put some away to a charity. You got to learn to tithe, you know. And so we've always had, you know, sponsor child.
Oh, sponsor child, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. That's kind of where we put, you know, saying, okay, if you're going to give, or if you're going to work, and we're going to have a child.
We had a house kid.
Yeah.
Or a kid's kid.
Yep.
But how that worked.
I guess at the end of the day, my question is what am I teaching my kids about money?
Yeah.
And what's long lasting? Just like we want our kids, to know everything there is to know about, you know, if we have the sex talk, you know, that God created sex. And so it's not dirty. It's not meant to be, you know, there's a place for it. There's a time for it. Obviously, there's a biblical understanding for this. But what's the biblical understanding of money? And that's why I think this series is so important. It's even for our kids to know. It says, okay, what can we learn about this? What am I? What do my kids think about me when they think about money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is that something that, you know, is we don't talk about that, or we just, you know, it doesn't really matter as long as the money keeps flowing. Nobody asks questions, and then, you know, but wow, it's huge, because eventually, as these kids grow up and they become teenagers and they grow into young adults, and then there's education and
there's all that debt, and people aren't learning how to take out loans or how to do wise loans or student debt, and it's incredible. That because you don't learn this in high school, they don't teach you this. Like I remember in high school, they didn't teach me anything about money, how to live by myself.
Mm-hmm. So I think maybe as a church and as family and as Christians, it is our duty to teach our kids. It is a parental responsibility to teach the value of money and what's most important. You know, so you know, just as we heard yesterday or in the weekend services, are about the understanding that you know money is good and. But it's also dangerous. And but what is most important here? You know, and often, you know, when we see those who are, you know, standing at the corners, you know, begging for money at the streetlights or whatever, and, you know, and we're thinking, okay, there's people who don't have money, but they're wanting money. So what do? Do we give them money or do we give them food? You know, all those kinds of things. And so there's things that you can do to help your kids recognize what's going on here. Because we get that feeling that money fixes everything. You know, if everybody just had money, we'd be okay.
And I think, I mean, our society or the world we live in certainly doesn't do us any favors with this regard. I mean, you turn on the TV for 2 minutes and you're just flooded with ads of, you know, you need this, you need that, trade in this and get that, and, you know, have now, use now, pay later kind of thing, get this credit card, whatever, you need a new car, anything, right? Our culture just tells us that we need whatever. And I think, too, part of this, we need to go back and re-understand, especially, too, I think for a parent, because, you know, even me raising a young family, I'm thinking, okay, I obviously need to provide the necessities, clothes, shelter, food, you know, there's some basics that parents are responsible to provide for their families. And I wonder if our culture is now ruined that as well, to say that, okay, actually what's necessary is this, you know, the iPhone 7, the blah, 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 you know, your kid actually needs this.
Yes.
And even you know, in the years since I've been in middle school or high school, what you see now as is the standard, or maybe as a, you know, quote unquote necessity, is totally different, right? Because now you actually need the name brand hoodie, and you need the Herschel backpack, and you need the iPhone or the whatever, you know, you need the Beats headphones. These are all now kind of just what you need. And, you know, it's funny, or the TV you have, you know, you can't have your friends over because our TV is too small or whatever, you know, there's so much, you know, everything's just become such a standard you've got to keep up with, and it only moves forward. And so I think part of it too, with what Ron's talking about in reshaping and making sure you're teaching proper values about money, is also understanding, okay, what's actually necessary? What's, what do we need? You know, what's our daily bread, right? Jesus tells us to go to our Father and, you know, ask for our daily bread. Well, what does that even look like?
Right. And I think the whole idea that we live in this instant gratification world, that, you know, the bank machine is right there. Let's get it now.
ATM.
You know, ATM at the moment. And I think that when we live that way, and if that is the pulse of how we live, is we can get it now, pay later, you know, all that kind of thing. And so isn't that how we deal with sin in our lives too? Is that, okay, I'll deal with it later. It's not a big deal right now, you know, and I think we keep pushing off and we don't deal with the realities of this. And I think we're at that time and place where we have to teach our kids that it's okay not to have. It's okay to just delay this for a moment, you know. And I'm not saying that you can't buy your kids gifts, and obviously not, because we wanted to and we will and all that. But as long as they understand what is most important. What is most important? And that's why I like putting a check in the offering bag, because you know, and not that you can do, you know, the ATM, you know, and you can do the bank card and all that kind of stuff, but it's good to put a check in there. Mm. And it says, I take time to write a check and say, hey, this belongs to God. Yeah. You know, it all does, but this is going there. You know, and I think we have to include our kids in on the conversation on money and to understand that this is something that they need to learn and grow with.
Yeah. Just as much as something even like sexuality.
Yes.
And, yeah. Of course.
Let's keep talking about it.
Keep talking.
Yeah. And I think in addition to talking about it, it's modeled, you know, mm-hmm. because if, you know, let's say you grew up in a household with very little, you can grow up and you're obviously, you're a product to some extent of how you were raised, right? So, you know, Luke, your experience with working and, you know, you worked at a steakhouse, right? You, mm-hmm. you've done all kinds of things, yeah. right? And me picking bottles and, yep. you know, all these kind of things. You're a product. You're a result to some degree of how you were raised. And even for you growing up on the prairies, things look different. And how you're raised matters.
And I think generosity, and let's not forget about the fact that it's good to be generous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to realize that we can bless people, mm-hmm. and we need to. Yeah. And I want my kids to be able to.
And I think that's something the kids hugely learn from their parents, because mm-hmm. that's what I learned from you. Like I always saw, when I saw a homeless person on the street, I want to walk right by, mm-hmm. but you would talk to them and be like, hey, can I buy you something? I'm not going to give you money, but I'll buy you, oh, there's Subway right there. I'll yep. go buy you something from Subway. And yeah. I saw that. I saw the generosity. You'd always open your house mm-hmm. to numerous college students who had nowhere to stay.
Yeah, I've eaten a lot of meals at the Friesen House.
Eating meals, yeah.
My name's Tate.
That's you being cheap.
No, there's that too.
So I think that is something huge as parents, is that don't forget that you are your kids' biggest role models.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah. like they look at you for everything, and especially money, because it's something that's so important in our culture, and they will watch you how you spend your money.
And I think you got to give until it hurts too.
Yeah.
If we just give out of the...
The fat.
You know, out of that part, that just doesn't really make a dent, you know? Mm-hmm. Give until it hurts a little bit. I think that's good.
Well, this is Between Two Worlds podcast. If you have any questions, feel free to email us at betweentoworlds@northu.org.
And if people are really unhappy you're welcome to write lfriesen@northview.org. Mm-hmm. Or go directly to the top dog, the big daddy-o, rfriesen@northview.org.
Yes.
All complaints forwarded to Rob.
Love it.
That sounds good.